Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're in fact listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. The hair on the mane of the wild blue stallion in tall mountain sky, high, full of snow, drifting off into the distance is like the blood in the body of a championship runner just after he won the title, with Niagara Falls pouring over mountains in the distance, ghosts and ghouls drifting off into the heavens with streams full of fish piled so high you could walk on them, your life running through time like a car on a highway, like salmon swimming and jumping up the watery stairs that lead to the end of their lives. Well, yes, this is you, Utah Phillips, your golden voice of the Great Southwest. That the other people have called me, I would not say that myself. I'm here with Steve Baker, who's doing all the technical part of the part that I can't do. And of course, it's the Borisdorfs, as usual, doing that marvelous music they put together. The poem I read at the beginning is certainly one of my favorites. That's by Robin Jernberg. He was in the third grade. That was one of Chris Olander's Poetry in the Schools programs, and Robin Jernberg wrote that. That's one of the great poems, my friends. We are here in the studios of radio station KVMR, Nevada City, California, a bastion of liberalism in a sea of conservatism. What is that old Charlie Kelly had said? The difference between a conservative and a liberal is that a liberal will hang you, but from a lower limb. It's Nevada City out there now. We feared it was going to snow like crazy, but it's a veritable tempest raining yesterday. Rain, rain, rain. What is it? I don't know who. Lord somebody the other said, the rain it raineth on the just and also on the unjust fella, but mainly on the just because the unjust steals the just's umbrella. Another great poem. Well now, this is the 100th Loafer's Glory program. After this one, I am going to, regretfully, have to suspend a Loafer's Glory. Loafer's Glory was intended, when I found out I had this serious heart condition, congestive heart failure, was intended to take over so that I could stay in town and still make a living without having to travel. And we have had some good support, the Haitian World Fund, through the Tides Foundation, the National Hobo Association. But the underwriting that are going to take care of the mortgage and take care of the health insurance and all that, it hasn't materialized to this point. So I'm going to have to go back on the road in a limited way, of course. But I've been taking care of myself, cardiac rehab, doing the appropriate medicine, a good diet. Besides, there's work out there, and these are the times. So I'm going to have to suspend the show because I find that I can't do both. I don't have the energy to do both. If things change, I'll be back here like a shot, cancel everything, and just stay here and do Loafer's Glory because I love it. For now, when the spirit moves me, I will do a Loafer's Glory special, and it'll be aired here at KVMR at our home station. And anybody who wants it can write into the address you'll get in a little while because we can send out CDs to any radio station that wants this show. And it'll appear at KPFA Berkeley on Robbie Osmond's show. We'll use up 1 hour of his Across the Great Divide at 11 o'clock Sunday morning. But all their 100 shows are all available, and any ones I do are also available. Thank you so much to Steve Baker for doing everything that I can't do, and for Cuddy getting the shows out to where they belong. Robbie Osmond, who backed me into this whole thing and convinced me that I could do radio. And then, of course, to all of you who have let me know by phone or by letter or in person that Loafer's Glory has added something to your lives. It certainly has to mine. Well, Loafer's Glory Radio, what I became convinced of when Robbie Osmond started me doing this down at KPFA Berkeley was that what I discovered is I can do things on the radio that I can't do on the stage. Well, a good example. I remember so often when I was playing in Chicago at the Quiet Night, sitting with Ed Belchowski, a veteran of the Spanish Civil War who had his arm blown off crossing the Ebro River. This was the fight against the fascists, Hitler, Mussolini, and Franco in Spain. The premature anti-fascists, they were called. Eddie was with the Abraham Lincoln Battalion that went over to Spain to fight against fascism, is where he lost his arm. This is in the late 1930s. Well, now, I did make a song about Eddie, you know. I did about him playing the piano with one hand. But I could do that song on the stage, and I could tell Eddie's story. But I have tape recordings of Eddie singing those songs of the Spanish Civil War and doing his own improvisations, all of his one-handed pieces. And so I can play those on the radio. I can't play those on the stage. Oh, I'd sit with Eddie late into the night there at the bar at the Quiet Night after all of the festivities had ended. Eddie would tell me about stories. He'd tell me about Hans Coppa. The first people the Nazis put in the concentration camps were the communists, the socialists, the trade unionists, and of course gypsies and gays, the mentally ill. Well, a number of those people, the Reds, the trade unionists, they escaped from those concentration camps, and those Germans went to Spain to fight against fascism. They formed what was called the Teilman Brigade, the Teilman Column. And their marching song was called Freiheit. Hans Coppa was the leader of that battalion. He was captured in Navarre, and he was tortured. They put cigarettes to his skin, forced him to drink whiskey until he vomited, and he began to laugh. And they said, "What are you laughing at?" And he said, "Turn my hands loose, and I'll show you." Well, they untied him. He tore open his shirt, branded into his chest was a swastika, and he looked at them and said, "You are amateurs, you Navarones with your red rose. You say you are the children of God. You have betrayed your God. You have betrayed your people. I will not speak." They were trying to find the location of his unit. "But if we tie you to the post," they said, he wouldn't speak. They tied him to the post, they raised the rifles, and as he prepared to fire, he raised his fists and cried, "No pasarán. They shall not pass." Here's Ed Belchowski.
This is Ed Belchowski, veteran of the Abraham Lincoln Battalion. I dedicate this recording to all anti-fascists, living, dead, or yet to be born. The international brigades that came to the aid of the Spanish Republic came from many, many different countries. But the first organized group to come to the aid of the Republic of Spain came from Germany, led by Ernst Thälmann. And this is the song of the Thälmann Colonna, Freiheit, freedom.
Das Morgengrün schon aus der Ferne, bald geht es zum neuen Land hinaus. Die Heimat ist weit, wir sind bereit. Wir kämpfen, wir ziegen für dich. Und dein Rückwärts gibt es für uns nicht. Die Heimat ist weit. Wir sind the Stillman Battalion.
Eddie Belchowski, passed away quite a long time ago. He was a great friend and a teacher to me. One hand on the keyboard. So much of Loafer's Glory has depended on people listening to it and figuring out what I was up to and sending me things. Sending me the poetry of Robert Service recited by himself. Obscure songs from the outback in Australia. These field recordings, tapes, what have you, have flowed into my house in a steady stream. And I've put it all back to work. I was down playing in Santa Cruz a while ago with Rosalie Sorrells and visiting with the Hobos from Hell in the squats up in the forest there. We went down to a big house called the Anarchist Coffee House, and there must have been about 150 young people there. And there was a fellow there, a little bit older, from the Sacramento Labor Chorus, named Bob Fitch. And he sang a song and got those kids singing a song. And I said, I want that. I want to take that to Loafer's Glory. I want people to hear this and then maybe learn it. And so I got it. He sent it to me. Here's Bob Fitch, an unknown song, and he'll explain it to you. It's Out of Our Pockets.
Bruce, here's that wonderful song, Out of Our Pockets. Nobody knows who wrote the words or who wrote the melody. It's an old mini depressions era gem. I learned it from Charlie King and Ted Warmbrand in June of 95 at the People's Music Network kind of annual summer gathering. I've revised the last verse and I've added a last verse. That's a little different. So here we go. By the way, it's best when it's sung with people doing motions, their hands taking things out of their pockets up into the air and goes into the pockets, hands coming back down into the pockets. People seem to like this as a kinesthetic song. I have heard monopolies own everything we see. Well, I'll be on the market soon, 'cause they own most of me. And after they have processed me and wrapped me up real nice, they'll sell me right back to myself at some god-awful price. Take it out of our pockets, out of our pockets, out of our pockets. Where does the money go? It goes into the pockets, into the pockets, into the pockets of the folks that got the dough. If we could think it over while we have the right to think, why some folks live in clover fields and others on the brink. When one man's got a million and millions got no dime, it looks like law and order's just a cover up for crime. They take it out of our pockets, out of our pockets, out of our pockets. Where does the money go? It goes into the pockets, into the pockets, into the pockets of the folks that got the dough. If we could think it over while we've got the right to think, why some folks live in clover fields, others on the brink. When one man's got a million and millions got no dime, it looks like law and order's just a cover up for crime. Take it out of our pockets, out of our pockets, out of our pockets. Where does the money go? It goes into the pockets, into the pockets, into the pockets of the folk that got the dough. Now I have heard that poverty's a way for God so wise to punish those who don't believe in this free enterprise. Surely does bother me, I but bet it bothers you. The way to make a living is to make a killing too. Take it out of our pockets, out of our pockets, out of our pockets. Where does the money go? It goes into the pockets, into the pockets of the folks that got the dough. You say there is no answer. I don't think it's true. I hear folk a-talking now, they're much like me and you. They say we can do better, it's what we all must do, like distribute profits from our work to more than just a few. Take it out of the pockets, out of the pockets, out of the pockets of the folks that got the dough. Put it into the pockets, the pockets of the workers who toil and make things go.
Bob Fitch, you know, I was watching all those young people stuffing their hands in their pockets and then waving them in the air, and it's yeah, you can do that with a bunch of kids. That's, I'm glad that song showed up. Visiting with the hobos from hell down there, I get asked often enough, are people still out there riding on the trains? You know, isn't that a thing of the past? Well, riding the rods, riding the blinds. Well, there are no blinds. There are no sway rods under the boxcars anymore. But, oh, yes, there are a lot of people riding, and there are a lot of young people riding who really know the ropes, who really know what they're up to. There are zines of good yards and bad yards. The hobos from hell down there, Lee, they put out a whole magazine, something about a train. Of course, it's changed a good bit of it. Hoboing, tramping is a sensibility. It's a sensibility, almost a temperament. The change, well, it used to be a boob into town. You come into town on a freight train, get off, you get a job a couple days swamping in a bar, pearl diving, you understand, working in the kitchen. You might get a job chipping bricks at the brickyard, so that they could be used over again, tenth of a cent a brick. Or you'd scavenge for copper in the junkyards. They call that a copper tramp. Build up a road stake so that you could get on a freight train and go on to the next town. Well, that system hasn't changed, you see. But now it's a young person, maybe come into town, get a rent a job, entering data in a video display terminal, some kind of mindless work at a minimum wage or less, and get up a road stake and boom on to the next place and get another job, work and saving up that money until, and all the time shopping the ads for cheap flights from fly-by-night airlines. And when you got the road stake together, you're in a little grass cabana on the beach in Costa Rica, you see, where you go down and hang on out on the docks and wind up as a deckhand on a catamaran to Tahiti. It's changed a bit, but it's still tramping, folks. It's still a sentiment. It's still a way of life that some people fall easily into and really regret having to give up. Let's take our minds way, way back to the old days of tramping. And Montana Slim is always one of my favorite singers. Here's another song that flowed into my house on a tape sent by a friend out there who's been listening to this program. Montana Slim and the Hobo and the Mountie.
Listen to the song of the hobo riding on the eastbound train amid the cinders flying from the old smokestack. Oh, listen to the sweet refrain. We're just a jolly bunch of hobos. No money, not a job can we find. So, Mr. Redcoat, don't let us keep you waiting. We're just a-going a little farther down the line. Some folks say we have no worries. No taxes, has her coal bills to pay. We get our heat and gas from the old smokestack as the old train is rattling on her way. Now we never stop to worry. The engineer is watching the line. All we gotta do is watch the Mountie, but we don't have much trouble getting off in time. Oh, his coat and buttons glistening in the sunshine, and at his belt is hung a wicked gun, just waiting there to catch a bunch of hobos, because depression made us all go on the bum. They say it's nice for us to make new acquaintances. Many times we're presented to the judge. 14 days in jail for riding on the rail, and then we all get thrown in the jug. Do the police ever stop to consider that we are helping them hold their jaws? If they didn't have the fun keeping us all on the run, they'd all be with us riding on the run. But now, folks, you've heard our story. The cops are a-heading down our way. They chase us going east, they chase us going west. Now I wonder where they think we're gonna stay. Lolly bunch of hobos, no money, not a job can we find. So, Mr. Redcoat, don't let us keep you waiting. We're just a good old father line.
Well, like I say, this Loafer's Glory meets no known engineering standard. That recording tape was taken from obviously an old 78 RPM, and they got chips and they got scratches, but that never bothered me. That's just a marvelous song, especially the part about the cops would be out of work riding on the rods if there wasn't people to chase around. another important part of Loafer's Glory has been the spoken word, not only mine, but a lot of other people's declamation. Glenn Howard, who's a record finder, and he's never struck out on me, has sent me marvelous things that I've asked for. And I thank Glenn for that. I don't care for poetry readings. Poetry today tends to come out of the hand and in it the eye. It's completely silent. It loses the music of the language. It loses the organic rhythm when you're sitting there at a table writing. Why should I sit and listen to somebody read from a book that's for sale in the lobby? No, I love poetry alive. I love declamation. I like it when poetry is intoned, when it's shouted. Like Chris Olander, my favorite performing poet, just stands up there and blasts it out. All right. Does anybody remember Hedda Hopper? She was a great gossip columnist in Hollywood years ago. Well, her husband, DeWitt Hopper, he recorded this in the 1920s. Now, you think about a poetry reading, and then you compare it to DeWitt Hopper and Casey at the Bat.
The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And so when Cooney died at first and Burrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. And they thought if only Casey could but get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake. And the former was a no-good and the latter was a fake. So upon that stricken multitude, grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake the much despised tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had arisen and the men saw what had occurred, there was Blake a safe at second, and Flynn a hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats went up a lusty yell. It rumbled in the valley, it rattled in the dell, it knocked upon the mountain top and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, what advancing to the back. There was pride in Casey's bearing as he stepped into his place. There was ease in Casey's manner and a smile on Casey's face. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat, no stranger in the crowd could doubt it was Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 10,000 hands applauded as he wiped them on his shirt. And when the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curved Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered spear comes whirling through the air. And Casey stood a-watching it in lofty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman the ball unheeded sped. That ain't my style, said Casey. The right one, the umpire said. Then from the benches, black with people, went up a muffled roar, like the beaten storm waves on a stern and distant shore. Kill it! Kill the umpire! Cried someone on the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage donned. He stilled the rising tumult. He bat the game, go on. He signaled to the pitcher. Once more the steroid flew, but Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, strike two! Hurrah! Cried the maddened thousands, and echo answered for all. But one scornful look from Casey, and the multitude was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The smile is gone from Casey's face. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his back upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. Somewhere bands are playing, and somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
Again, that was a great Kenny Hall Boy, I've loved using him in our intermissions. As I've said, I'm going to be traveling more, and there in mid-April, I'll be doing a concert with Kenny Hall down in Fresno, California. Kenny's going to try to play along with me doing whatever it is that I do. That ought to be quite a sight. I've heard so often that the future belongs to the youth. Well, I don't agree with that. The future belongs to anybody who feels they can do any good. It's up to the elders to give young people tools and ideas to create that future. Dreams. Nothing creates the future like a dream. To me, the most useful source of these come from the labor movement. Well, you all know that. It's time, past time, for the labor movement to become intimately involved with the public schools to make sure that our history, that the substance of our lives is taught to our children before they go into the workforce. We've got to learn to intervene in the curricular process. We've got to take over the PTAs. The Christian Right has proven that that can be done, hasn't it? We got to make sure our kids come out of school knowing what a scab is and why not to be one. Come out of school knowing that they have the right of collective bargaining, how to form a union. They have a right to belong to a union. Well, now, I've strung together some ideas and tools and miscellaneous stuff here that seems to be related on that. We're going to listen to a 50-year-old recording of Siobhan McKenna, the great Irish actress reciting from Yeats, and then me, then my old friend Peter Alsop, John McCutcheon, the president of my union, Deborah Van Fleet, and then Len Wallace. Well, you see if you get anything out of this.
The Stolen Child. Where dips the rocky highland of Sleuth Wood in the lake, there lies a leafy island where flapping herons wake the drowsy water rats. There we've hid our fairy vats full of berries and of reddest stolen cherries. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild with a fairy hand in hand. For the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Where the wave of moonlight glosses the dim grey sands with light, far off by furthest rosses we footed all the night, weaving olden dances, mingling hands and mingling glances, till the moon has taken flight. To and fro we leap and chase the frothy bubbles, while the world is full of troubles and is anxious in its sleep. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand. For the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Where the wandering water gushes from the hills above Glen Car, in pools among the rushes that scarce could bathe a star. We seek for slumbering trout, and whispering in their ears, give them unquiet dreams. Leaning softly out from ferns that drop their tears over the young streams. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand. For the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Away with us he's going, the solemn-eyed. He'll hear no more the lowing of the calves on the warm hillside, or the kettle on the hob sing peace into his breast, or see the brown mice bob round and round the oatmeal chest. For he comes, the human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, from a world more full of weeping than he can understand.
And how I got down to California, of course, was Brendan over there. You know, he was a lot younger then. And that's when he remembers, when he was, I'd be out on the road, I'd call home, and he would pop these lines and get getting thrown out of school. What's invisible and smells like worms, bird farts, remember that? How come the crack in your butt goes up and down instead of back and forth? Yeah, they sent you home from Montessori for that. When you get sent home from Montessori, you have blown it in a major way. And why does the crack in your butt go up and down instead of back and forth? The answer was, so when you're in the playground going down the slide, you won't go blah, 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 blah. Thought the kid had a future right there. Of course, then they got the Young Writers Project going. Now, you remember that, Brendan. And he was involved in that. That's where they put poets and writers in the schools and public schools and teach them writing skills. And then they pyramid these Young Writers Conferences up to the state level. So he asked me if I would come out and tell stories. Remember that auditorium? What was that? Was that a gymnasium? God, I was going to behave myself because I lived there at that time. But often, and there was 2,100 young faces out there, none of them with any prospects anybody could detect. And along the side of the stage was a suit and tie crowd sitting there, from the school district and the principals, the teachers, and the main speaker following me from the Chamber of Commerce. Something inside of me snapped. And I got to the microphone, I looked out of that sea of young faces, and I said something to the effect of, "You're about to be told one more time that you're America's most valuable natural resource. Have you seen what they do to valuable natural resources?" Have you seen a strip mine? Have you seen a clear cut in the forest? Have you seen a polluted river? Don't ever let them call you a valuable natural resource. They're going to strip mine your soul. They're going to clear cut your best thoughts for the sake of profit unless you learn to resist, because the profit system follows the path of least resistance, and following the path of least resistance is what makes a river crooked. Ha! No rant control. Well, I was picked up bodily and carried to the door, hurling epithets over my shoulder, something to the effect of, "Make a break for it, kids. Flee to the wilderness." The one within, if you can find it. Yeah. So I left the state, came to California. Better man for it. But I did send them back a letter, though, to their little literary magazine. I respected those kids. I respect all kids. They're assholes, but you know, they're their own asshole. That's why we like kids. Not somebody else's asshole. But I can say whatever I want. It's my last show. I sent them a nice letter. I sent sage things in there. My mother, Kitty Cohen, that she told me to help me down the road of life, she'd say things like, "As you travel down the road of life, don't forget to take time to spray the roses." Aphids, she hated aphids, disgusting. And she'd say, "A bird in the hand ain't worth nothing if you're trying to blow your nose." They wiggle around, yeah, you try it, doesn't work worth a damn. But I told those kids, I said to them, "If you learn anything in your barn of learning, let it be this, that being likable will get you further than talent." Do I know this?
I'd rather have a piece of chicken.
Too bad.
Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace, and we don't want to fry. Chicken for peace, we're chickens for peace. One little war, and we're chicken pot pie. and no one respects a chicken who bakes chickens for peace. We're chickens for peace. One little slip and we're hard-boiled eggs. Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace. But we're not chickens, we're taking a stand. Chickens for peace.
Some signs and a tiny picket line, and Mike and Charlie put some posters on the wall. Yes, we kids are out on strike. Yes, we've organized, and we won't go back to ever being kids again until we're recognized. For our generation, we think it wise you consider our demands. You're only in control for just a little while, then you leave things in our hands. So give us a head start at doing well. Take good care of all your parents gave to you. Every little thing you do one day comes back to you. Even a child could understand. That's why we kids are out on strike. That's why we've organized, and we won't go back to ever being kids again until we're recognized. That's why.
Come all you fast food workers, wherever you may dwell, if you'll consent to listen, a story I will tell. Of six young workers like yourselves who were compelled to go and labor for McDonald's in Macedonio. 'Twas in Northeast Ohio this burger franchise stood. As in many such establishments, conditions were not good. The wages, they were meager, but by far the greatest woe was to work for Jerry Guffey in Macedonio. Now Jerry was the manager, a spiteful man was he. If ever you displeased him, his anger you would see. With foul names and shoves and shouting, his curses they would flow. He was the meanest fast food boss in Macedonia. And Margaret, she was 66, she worked from need not choice. One day she left a bag of trash out of its proper place. When Jerry came upon it, his rage did overflow. The staff looked on as Margaret wept in Macedonia. 'Twas on an Easter Sunday, student workers made a vow. Abuse of youth and elderly no longer will allow. These brave young people left their jobs, their paychecks did forego, to walk upon a picket line in Macedonia. Now Brian Drapp walked out, Jamal Nickens he did too. Josh Jones and Matt Casserly, they joined the picket crew. Steve Stem and Heidi Schaefer, solidarity did show. They led the fight for dignity in Macedonia. From CNN to Leno, Howard Stern to NPR, the story of the fast food strike was carried near and far. McDonald's high executives, to save the status quo, sent in a crack consultant to Macedonia. Then Teamsters Local 416 came to the strikers' aid. These kids against your corporate might's an unfair fight, they said. We're here to balance out the scales, the company said no. We will not talk with unions in Macedonia. At Route 8 and the interstate, the strikers held their ground. They thrust aloft their picket signs as the April rains beat down. Till a Teamster bakery driver, he dealt the final blow. He would not cross a picket line in Macedonia. The bosses watched in horror as the truck it rolled away. They knew it carried all the buns they needed for that day. While 20 cheering picketers still marching to and fro saw victory within their grasp in Macedonia. A fair wage and paid vacations, better safety at the grill. In every point of bargaining, the workers had their will. And to a training program, Jerry Guffey's forced to go to brush up on his people's skills in Macedonia. You've heard of labor struggles in Harlan's bloody hills, at Homestead, Flint, and Ludlow, and in Massachusetts mills. In April 1998, the history books will show how fast food workers held the line in Macedonia.
La lutte finale, groupons-nous et demain, l'international sera le genre humain. Arise, ye prisoners of starvation, arise, ye wretched of the earth, for justice thunders condemnation, a better world's in birth. No more tradition's chains shall bind us, arise, ye slaves, no more enthrall. The earth shall rise on new foundations, we have been not, we shall be all. It's the final conflict. Let each stand in place. The international shall be the hue. shall be the human race. We want no condescending saviors to rule us from their judgment hall. We workers ask not for their favors. Let us consult for all. To make the feet disgorge his booty, to free the spirit from itself. We must ourselves decide our duty. We must decide and do it well. It's the final conflict. Let each stand in place. The international shall be the human race. It's the final conflict. Let each stand in place. Toilers from all fields united, join hand in hand with all who work. The earth belongs to us, the workers, no room here for the shirk. How many on our flesh have fattened, but if the noisome birds of prey shall vanish from the sky some morning, the blessed sunlight then will stay. It's the final conflict. Let each stand in place. The international shall be the human race. It's the final conflict. Let each stand in place. The international shall be the human race.
This has been Lorfer's Glory, show number 100, The Hobo Jungle of the Mind. This is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest. Thanks for sticking with me. I will not grow into a sad old red or be comforted by illusion. I will not fall upon a sword of dreams or speak to the young of better times when I was young. No, I will not grow into a sad old red or live to see the death of joy or pass a torch I have never borne alone. We are in this together. We have a long way to go.